Hey guys, welcome to the Fit Dad Lifestyle Podcast. The Fit Dad Lifestyle is a community and supplement brand where fathers support other fathers throughout the journey of fatherhood. We believe that maintaining a healthy lifestyle isn't about crash diets and the latest workout craze. Instead, we offer dads the education, resources, and support they need to maintain a balanced lifestyle long term. There aren't a lot of dedicated community groups for dads, and we know that men are generally less likely to talk about the challenges they face in life. So we wanted to go above and beyond the meal plans and quick fixes and offer a way for fathers to communicate in a helpful, negative-free environment. Whether it's supporting your partner when a new baby arrives, balancing work and the kids, or just fitting in time to get your health and fitness back on track. This podcast aims to inspire, motivate, and encourage you to be the best father you can be and the leader that your kids want to see you be every day. It's brought to you by Fit Dad Fuel. Fit Dad Fuel is our supplement range. Our supplement range helps support this podcast, the workouts, the online education, and the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes to help keep everything as cost-free as possible for dads worldwide. Enjoy the episode. Here it is, guys. Hey, guys. Welcome to episode 142 of the Fit Dad Lifestyle Podcast. Today, we've got a very special guest, Harry Moffat. So, Harry, former SAS veteran with nearly 30 years service, qualified psychologist, human performance coach, and author of 11 Bats. So, Harry, welcome to the podcast, mate.
Thanks for having me, Leroy.
Mate, are you able to tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and how many kids you've got?
Yeah, mate. Well, I'll start with a family. Married to adult children now, pretty old, with the kids out and almost married, or one of them almost is. Living here in Melbourne. We're all here, which is great, and spending some time together. My background is 30 years with the military, the majority of that around 20 years with the SAS. I enlisted in 86, SAS selection in 1990, and I discharged in 2019 and had a bit of a hiatus at the end of the 90s. In amongst all of that, 11 deployments overseas, thus the 11 bats and the book, and now qualified psychologist, and we're building a small business here in Melbourne around human performance and organizational development. So I hope that covers it, Leroy.
Yeah, definitely, mate. And mate, quickly on the 11 books, and we'll go into more details afterward. 11 bats, mate. How did that all start? How did that come about for the people that obviously haven't had a chance to read the book yet? And, how did all that start with the deployments and then where it's up to now?
Yeah, well, I've always loved cricket, growing up, backyard cricket, and still to this day, I'm just about to join the National Backyard Cricket organisation, which will be a life dream, actually. And so I've always had it in me. And then after September 11, which is poignant, obviously, this week, we were deployed into Afghanistan. We were first boots on the ground. And we were at a safe house or a compound up in Asadabad and doing some night border ops and reconnaissance work. And it's pretty boring, Leroy, as you know, it's kind of a lot of that type of work's just sitting around not doing much, and it's kind of punctuated by excitement and missions. We were of a mind to get a cricket bat, and the CIA interpreter, John, he went across the border into Pakistan, brought it back, and we played cricket. And that was the very first bat, the Shahid Afridi bat. It became my habit to take a cricket bat on each tour, on each deployment. And therefore the 11 deployments, 11 bats I collected over the time. It was my habit also to have all of the men and women I served with on those deployments sign the bats. And now they make that curious collection that you can see online. And it wasn't really a thing until probably 2007 or 2008, by about the seventh or eighth bat, I started to think of it as a collection. Up until then, it was just to play with a bat, get people to sign it, chuck it in a box when I got home. And it kind of grew out of that. They've been presented in or displayed in the Australian War Museum and the Shrine of Remembrance down here. So they're kind of a thing. Well, they are for me anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And for the guys
Those that are listening, once you finish your gym session or run or whatever you're doing right now, make sure you go to the 11 Bats website, and I'll put all the links in the show notes, because there's a nice little, it's a very short, only a minute, quick story about each bat that I deep dived into this morning. It was just amazing to hear the, I guess, the story behind each bat and, you know, its origin. And yeah, once you do that, also jump on the website and grab a copy of the book. And where else can they find that, Harry, online?
Yeah, so it's available on all platforms, Leroy, Amazon, Audible, Kindle, and you can buy them on, order them through. I always encourage people to go through their independent, local independent bookstores. I'm a big fan of reading and books, and I think that there's a lot of businesses doing it tough, but in terms of books, I think a lot of the smaller bookstores are really, now they're doing well, but yeah, if you can find your local bookstore and slip a note under their door and tell them to send a book to you, I think that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, mate, I love it. Mate, getting back to the fatherhood and the fitness side of things, obviously being involved in such an elite unit like the SAS and, you know, the physical demands that that brings, was keeping fit and, you know, active always part of your upbringing, obviously with the cricket and stuff like that? Or was it something that you developed a lot more when you joined the army and then ultimately passed, you know, the Carter course and got into the SAS?
Yeah, no, up until the military, I ran around like a dickhead, like, you know, all young fellas, or not, well, most young fellas, football, basketball, cricket, you know, I'd play every sport that I could. But it wasn't until I hit the military that I started to understand that there was, you know, there was a science to it, and methodology and programmatic kind of approach. And that kind of just increasingly through my career, I became more attuned to that methodologies, or the, you know, the kind of training methodologies and how to train optimally and for purpose. And certainly when you hit the SAS, there's 2 years of really hard training. It's on average a year and a half or 2 years, and you need to focus on, you know, I discovered what cardio was. You remember this is the 80s and 90s. I discovered how posterior chain works and why it's so important. You know, I discovered what lifting and what was rubbish. You know, too many push-ups and chin-ups are not good, but you know, that there was an optimal amount of work that you need to do. I discovered recovery. That wasn't a thing in the 90s. You just, if you weren't training 10 hours a day, you were soft, you know. So that increasingly, and it kind of led me onto psychology and physiology and human performance. I think I had a deep fascination, and I think most people do, and I know you do, and we know a lot about it now. But it's safe to say and obvious to say that to keep up operations and performance in the SAS, you need to have, I think, I offer humbly an elite or an above average to an elite level of fitness.
Yeah. And when did nutrition become important to you, and with all that understanding and, I guess, you know, research and studies, was that when you got over to the SAS and, you know, understood a lot more of this stuff, you know, a lot more intimately, that nutrition become a big part of it? Or were you very aware of, you know, what was going in your body and, you know, how you went about that, you know, from the get-go?
Yeah, probably not. So, and it's actually a really point, you know, on point question, because nutrition is probably an example of the progression of our understanding as athletes or as, you know, physiological beings over the last decade. So in the 90s, it wasn't, you know, it was drink beer all weekend and yeah, then just run and do push-ups and chin-ups and get in the, and just, there wasn't a great deal of, you know, the PTIs were good, but it was generally self-determined pathways of physical fitness and nutrition. But I guess when I got to the regiment, probably not as advanced as I would have thought, reflecting back on it. At the time, it was just normal. It was more around eat big, get big, I suppose, and high protein. You know, a lot of people were taking shakes and supplements and things, but they didn't really understand why. It was just, you know, eat big and also take heaps of shakes a day and whatnot. So it was emerging at that stage. And I for me, probably around 2000 and, you know, the late 10s, 2008, 9, 10, something like that, that was the first time I think we had some PTIs and individuals in the unit who came through and said, hey, you know, eating a massive steak and hot vegetables and chips and everything at lunch is probably not the best thing to do when you've got to go out and do a whole bunch more work or to recover. So hard training in the morning, you know, that was when the regiment, I think it was one of the first regiment, but one of the first messes in the military, I think it's fair to say, that started offering things like sandwiches and something light, you know, the carbs and whatnot to in a more dedicated way or targeted way. And now the unit and most units around the military have a good sense of what's the right food for the right time, and that education's you know, your evidence of that education's filtering through the whole of society now.
Yeah, so that was definitely something you've seen from that 2008 to 10 until your discharge in 2019, sort of filter through the wider army as well, and everyone get a bit more understanding about you know nutrition as a whole.
Yeah, nutrition part of the human performance program. So there's, you know, the physiology, we're pretty good now. Most people who are in gyms, even the novice civilians, if I can loosely use that term, yeah. But even the novices know a bit about what a hamstring is and what recovery is and what overtraining is and what targets and aims and goals. They know about nutrition, and if they don't, they kind of might park it on weekends for a bit, but we have a good understanding. And it kind of points to my area that I'm fascinated in. Psychology is kind of at that emergent stage. You know, we kind of think we know a little bit about it. We don't really know what's going on inside, you know, the motivation or consciousness, et cetera. So I think if I was to overlay the physiology of the 90s or the nutrition of the early 2000s knowledge, we're probably at that point in psychology now and in the 2020s, and you can feel we're just starting to really get that out more broadly, accepted into elite sports, and on the back of mental health probably.
Mate, 100%. I think, and that leads into the next question, but I think you're exactly right, because mental health has been that buzz word for the last couple of years, and it's now starting to get a bit more traction, and specific things like postnatal depression in men, and, you know, all these different other things that people are now openly talking about. Whereas a couple of years ago, it was sort of just, it was a silent sort of, you know, killer on the back end. And your mental health as a broad sort of spectrum was probably much the same. And I think in the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to be a lot more open and a lot more acceptable for men to feel comfortable actually speaking about it.
Yeah, definitely. I use an analogy, not professionally, but I like the analogy. When I played footy, I played a reasonable level of footy in junior rep footy, and even the coaches there, you know, you got a hammy twang or something like that, they'd tell you to run it out, like literally get a quad strain, run it out, get a hip flexor strain, run it out, go and run laps. Worst thing you could possibly do. The best thing to do is to stop, put ice on it, and let the body heal itself with good nutrition.
That's right. You get Corky playing footy, and they'd be like, "Yep, go run some laps." And yeah, run around. Is
that? I know. So, but back then I went, "Yeah, okay, that makes sense." So, you know, you just kind of push through it, and we're kind of, and again, so that's the 90s, and so I feel like we're at the 90s now with mental health and the psychology of performance too, and that's not a, you know, it's not, doesn't mean we're all idiots, we're just on this journey of learning, and so mental health has emerged as the center of gravity to a wider discussion of not just mental health, because mental health in the context of depression, anxiety and stress is one part of our psyche and one part of the psychology. And it often kind of gets, a lot of things get lumbered into mental health when they're probably just kind of lower level stress and completely deal, you know, you can deal with those things, or they might be other phenomena. But, you know, the whole mental performance, mental and cognitive tools and skills that we all have, we're starting to understand that the twang with the hammy is not to be run out, it's to be stopped and put some ice on it. And I think that tech or that level of sophistication is only just arriving with people like, you know, yourself and myself, able to kind of to explore it from a practitioner's perspective and translate the language.
Yeah. And is there anything that out there may be apps, there may be, you know, websites or, you know, platforms that you could recommend to any dads that are potentially struggling that they can start implementing into their, you know, daily routine? Because a lot of them, are covered, you know, physically and covered, you know, by a nutrition, but, you know, they don't know where to sort of start by looking after their mental fitness.
Yeah. So look, the very first thing, and you've just mentioned it, the very first thing I'll say to everyone, and I'm sure you will agree, Leroy, that, you know, the performance triad, you need to, if you haven't got those three things right, then you're off on a bad start. You're going to be swimming against the tide. And that is good nutrition, daily activity. So you don't have to be running and pumping and CrossFitting your way around the world. It's just going for a good long walk, you know, 30, 40 minute walk every day, if that's where you start, or every second day, whatever you can do. And the third thing is the sleeping giant of sleep. You know, sleep is just so bloody critical. It's so obvious and boring, but it's so important. It's worth me. Just something like getting up at the same time, bringing routine. Your body loves routine, and then it can predict things like the release of hormones and chemicals that are important to functioning of the body. When you surprise it with getting up late or staying up late or getting up or whatever, you shock your body, it kind of throws it out for a little while, and sleep's the first thing that can be impacted. So those three things are absolutely non-negotiable, critical, and they're boring and you know them all, but the people who have the discipline to do those well probably get by the best. But inevitably, life and current stress builds up on us. And there's a million apps out there, Leroy. I'm not going to suggest anything specific. You know, what I will say is if you are feeling down, you don't know where to go and you haven't got social support, or you don't feel like you can go to social support, you know, there's a number of Black Dog Institutes, one that I like to, Beyond Blue. They have some great platforms and great apps that include activity and all the rest of it. It's a good starting point, easy to access. But don't, you know, social support's critical. Once a week, but you might not feel like talking, jumping on a Zoom beer or a catch up with friends or anything, but you need to have the discipline to do that because it's good for you, like eating your greens, like going for a run. You know, it doesn't always feel, you don't always want to do it, but you must do it. I think there's other things, you know, for people who like meditation or mindfulness. You know, you speak to the people who do it regularly, they'll say it's made an incredible difference to their life. For some people, going back just to reading books, etch out 30 minutes, an hour a day, get your favorite book, reread it, and just get into a routine of leaving your own mind and going off and wandering around. You know, there's maybe social connection. I mean, the list is endless. It's a journey, but there's lots of great information online and particularly on those resources that I mentioned, Beyond Blue and the Black Dog Institute. I think they're great places to start. And once you're on that journey, you'll discover the labyrinth of apps and other supports out there.
Yeah, fantastic, mate. Well, I'll make sure I include the Black Dog Institute and Beyond Blue in the show notes. So guys, if you are struggling or you are looking for something else to help you along, then make sure you check out the show notes and the description. You'll be able to get links directly to those organizations. Mate, if you could go back to Harry on day one of fatherhood with everything you know to be true today, after the amount of experience that you've had and, you know, the views and the education that you've, you know, developed, what would you tell yourself?
Spend more time with my kids. It's been, I've sacrificed, I think it's fair to say, my kids' time with my career in the SAS. It's a regret, but it's a regret that couldn't be any other way. So maybe a bit difficult, but, you know, being present, not, you know, you can have a tendency to put time constraints and things, but it's being present and spending time with the kids and getting to know them. That's what I've missed out on. You know, kids just want to know you care and want to spend time with you, you know, and unconditionally. And sometimes we can be just way too distracted on our own missions and our own journeys. And, you know, and I see parents with phones and all those types of things. I think there's a really good argument for being present with your children. And I think there's a little bit of, well, there's a lot maybe a lack of that with some parenting and being engaged and meaningfully engaged with them, purposely engaged with them is something I would tell my younger self and would be advice I'd give to young fathers. you know, and it's no longer a thing that the father just goes off to work and mum stays at home and looks after you. That's done. If that's the way you're going into parenting, I think you're going to be on the back foot. Things have changed in that regard. But don't squander it, whatever you do, because I don't have any other regrets in my life except for that. And I'd say just lap it up and be present and non-distracted whenever you're with your kids.
Yeah, mate, I love that. And mate, it's one of the statistics. It was Glenn Nazar. I'm not sure if you know him, a fellow veteran as well, based down in Brisbane. He does a lot of performance coaching and working with Dan Cooper as well,
I think. Yeah, great. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, the statistic he said on the podcast was the average father spends 34 meaningful minutes with their child per day, and that's it. And that's one-on-one time, no distractions, not traveling in the car to school, not, you know, at dinner watching TV. It was like one-on-one time, and it was mind-blowing. And you know, we ran a sort of a couple of surveys, and a lot of people were very close to, you know, that number. And on top of that, 80% of the time that, you know, you ever spend with the kids was over by the time you were 18. Like, that was another one that was out there. And you know, I think once a lot of fathers and even the guys that are listening right now heard those two statistics, the outlook on the next, you know, few years just changed dramatically, because it was you know, it really is a big smack in the face knowing that, you know, depending on what age your kids are, you half the time could be, you know, gone already. It's really bizarre, but
it might only be, but if that's what you can afford, and look, there, you know, we would hope you can spend far more than that, of course, Leroy, and we both would agree with that. But if you only have 34 minutes today, you know, put your phone away, because I hear a lot of parents say to me, they spend too much time on the. Well, if they see you spending time on it, of course they're going to copy you. Kids copy their parents. It's kind of how they get through. For the overwhelming majority of kids, they copy what their parents. And you can tell a lot about. I could tell a lot about you about from your kids. You know, it's not hard to do. So put your bloody phone away, get muck in and say, what do you want to do? And get engaged with what they want to do. And sometimes it doesn't involve you. This is another thing too. You know, kids, you might not be cool today. And it might be just to check in to say, hey, what are you up to? What are you doing? You know, I find with my son now, I probably have the best communication with him over text. You know, how you going, mate? You all right? Yeah, good. And I can communicate him all day. You know, so it's not always the channel that you need. It's not always the walk to the park that's the regular, but it may be. But I think it's being present. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up and educate yourself, and being attentive and being engaged. That's the kids know, and that's what can get in between relationships when they know that you're not engaged. They're finely tuned. Children to be picking up the signals of whether you're legitimately, authentically engaged with them, and that can foster either way, obviously.
Mate, 100%. Mate, one of the questions we get a lot from dads, and I'd love to get your opinion on it, is, you know, loving your motivation. You know, I've got my goals, I've got access to gyms at work, I know what I need to be eating, but I don't know how to start. What would you have to say to any father out there that is struggling just taking that first step in doing whatever it is, whether it be, you know, fitness or, you know, health related?
Yeah, well, let's keep it at that. Yeah, I think, which is a great first step. It's part of the triad. You know, let's talk about the performance triad. I love that. It's the old US Army or Marine term, and it's probably from somewhere else before that. You know, I think the first thing I always say to everyone, and it's just a no-brainer again, but it's so important, it's worth saying over and over again, is go out and get help. You know, that no one's an island and no one's an expert. So, I you know, the first thing I'd be doing is just examining your network mentally. All right, who do I trust? All right, Harry, he knows a bit about physiology. I might go and see him. I want to get started. So what am I going to do about it? I'm going to action it by going to see someone and saying. And, you know, don't go too hard. Don't scroll through bloody muscle books and the elite athletes and what they're doing. That's all, you know, start small, start achievable, incremental changes. The first thing, if you're coming off nothing and you're overweight and you're feeling a bit down on yourself and the kids are starting to grow up and you've got time, start off with this. 3 walks for 40 minutes in 3 days this week. Achieve that and then think about running and then think about whatever it is. If you're not into walking and that sounds too much, then get down the park and go for a run. I love kicking the footy. My go-to now is football. I go down to the oval and I'll run hard, soft, kick the footy around for 40 minutes and come back and I'm gassed and I feel good. And I still lift and I still do. And I love saunas. But you've got to start small and cut yourself some slack. And I think once you've had a few wins there, nutrition is the same. Not many people really understand. They know what's right, but they don't know when to use it, to when to use, you know, when to employ protein, when to employ carbs, when to, you know, what time were your digestive rhythms at, you know, gut health, etc. And again, I always finish with it is sleep. You know, you've got to prioritize that. It has to be the highest priority in your life in terms of your own physical self-care. I find it underpins or undermines most people's performance, no matter how hard they're training, how well they're eating. Mood is it underpins mood, and I think that's what does that do? That undermines motivation, how you action and how you set and achieve goals. So, go get help from someone first thing. Set small, incremental, achievable goals and build from there. Do what you enjoy: play footy, go for a run, and you know, get your sleep sorted. I think it's really important.
Mate, fantastic answer, mate. I highly appreciate you taking the time to jump on the podcast today. It's been an absolutely amazing chat, and it's been great to get an insight from someone with your education and obviously experience. And mate, what do you have coming up that people might be able to get involved in? And you know, I know with lockdowns, there might not be as many book events or anything like that. And also with the consulting stuff, where can people who have their own companies get in touch?
Well, the book, it's almost run its course. So I'll leave that. And I'm relieved it's a good read, apparently. So thank God for that. It's a good laugh and a good insight, I think, and good at the moment because there's a lot of bad press for the regiment at the moment. I think it's a counter narrative. The business is Stoughton Group. We're still in startup and formation, so I'm not going to sell that too hard at the moment. People want to find it, they can. But what is coming up is I'm about to join a charity, another charity. So I'm kind of moving out of the veteran space and transforming into complete civilian. Take up a position with the LBW Trust to raise money for high school and tertiary students in developing nations. And that's something I'm super passionate about. Education, we all know that empowering and educating women, for example, is how to cure poverty or lift people out of poverty. So I'd encourage everybody to have a look at that. It's probably a good place to end, mate. You know, it's something I encourage everybody should be involved in, some charitable, not-for-profit, sidebar in their life, because actually helping other people is such a great way to build resilience and to motivate yourself, you know. So if you're looking for one, go and have a look at the LBW Trust website, not-for-profit, and doing some amazing work. And it's got cricket. It's all about playing cricket, bringing people together with 3 games of cricket, or 1 game of cricket at a time.
Yeah, fantastic, mate. Well, mate, I'll make sure I had all these links to all the different organisations, charities, trusts, and obviously your book and the Stoughton Group on the website. So, guys, once you finish up what you're doing, make sure you check out the show notes and you'll be able to get in touch with Harry and, go support him on the socials, and we'll make sure all those links are in there as well. So, mate, highly appreciate the chat, and we'll speak to you very soon.
Excellent, Leroy. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, mate.